Hello and welcome to Null Pointers. We're your hosts, Mark.
And Stephen.
And today we'll be discussing .NET Aspire. But Stephen, before we dive into .NET Aspire, which is an aspirational thing of us, I think, have you heard the latest and greatest, which by the time this show will air, probably isn't anymore the latest and greatest, but it was quite hot off the press when we recorded it. Anyhow, so you know the story about Visual Studio on Mac and how that's going. I mean, we made an entire show on it, so I hope you can still remember.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Yeah, there's that. And so Visual Studio Code is like the new default by Microsoft, one has to say. I mean, there are other alternatives out there, like Rider from JetBrains, which also works nicely for Maori development. But if you use Visual Studio Code, so far, one thing it was lacking was a hot reload. And it has been announced that, so at the time of recording, it's preview, so you would have to take the preview extension for that. But you can now have XAML hot reload, which is the first step to hot reload goodness in its entireness on Visual Studio Code. So what do you think about that, Stephen?
I mean, there's nothing that beats hot reload when it comes to my favorite activity, which is tinkering with UIs and stuff like that. So it really is indispensable in that sense. Going back to a life where there is no hot reload, it just isn't for me. It just ain't. So talking about Rider, because you mentioned it just now, I've been trying for ages to get hot reload to work. And my stupid brain finally figured out why it wasn't working for me. And that's because I'm hitting the play button to run my app. And I'm not hitting the little bug icon instead. Yeah. So it's always starting it in non-debug, which means you don't have this stuff.
Yeah, there's just that thing whenever you change your development environment. I mean, so many things are just like the same. And then you got like these little things that can mean the world to certain like features or stuff that you're then suddenly missing out on. Because on Visual Studio, the play button, they got like different play buttons.
Yeah, they have different signals. Play buttons, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's debug for the most part.
Before using Rider, I usually always ran in debug by default. I never just ran the app without debug because why would I? And it was because of like that. In Rider, it's like very strongly highlighted, these two modes that you can pick from. And the amount of speed boost you get when not debugging is just like insane. I remember like once testing a app with a colleague who did another part. And he was like, wow, your app is like super slow. And I went like, yeah, but wait, this is debug mode. I'll show you without debug, but still not the release. And he was like, wow, this is really fast. I go like, yeah, I know, because it's .NET. And .NET is really fast and really awesome and really cool. So yeah.
Or at least it can be.
It can be. I mean, sure. I mean, you can. I think that's with everything, right? Even the most performant languages like Rust or stuff. I mean, if you go down that road, you will manage to program a Rust application that's slower than JavaScript, probably. And JavaScript isn't even that slow, which is kind of insane when you think it's an interpreted language. But yeah, that might be for another show. I don't know what Maybe. Show that would ever be. Maybe a 5-minute tidbit on, I don't know what. So yeah, moving along.
Mark does JavaScript. Yeah.
So yeah, so we got hot reload. I mean, that's really cool. Build just was around the corner. I saw a very nice summary on the interwebs by Morten, and it was AI. Probably still some co-pilots sprinkled in between. I think Microsoft, they don't really say a lot AI. They usually say co-pilot, and there's a lot of co-pilots going on. And a lot of things are going on. I actually watched the keynote by Satya, and I think it's like interesting to see how much effort is behind the AI effort, like compute-wise or chip-wise, and also how they try to optimize these models for less energy use, or that you can like run them more efficiently and still get the same results. Because it seems to be quite expensive, and I've also heard rumors. I don't know how true they are, so be aware that this, what I'm just saying, is just a rumor that I heard. That it's still interesting. Like, will AI ever break even? You know, like the amount of cost it has to run, and like the teaching set aside, which is a lot of scientific stuff still going on. So a lot of these things that they're working on might be dead ends, and then you know that it's a dead end. So that's what science is about, finding what works and what doesn't. So question is, like, will you ever have like a revenue stream from it? And I think it will show in the next few weeks, months, years, if this AI is here. But I think there are some use cases that are quite cool. I like, especially the RAG, like when you, the augmentation of the results with documents. I've been recently looking at that, and that's quite cool. So you can, like, if you've got like these large enterprise documents, like these PDFs, or you got an export of something as PDF, you can then index those. So you can index like the titles, the subtexts, the pages, like the page number, I want to say. And so you can then have like a chat-based dialogue. So you can like have those documents, and then you index those documents, let's say, and you can then hook it up with a vector database. And what a vector database, like in very, very high terms, allows you is you can ask a question which isn't exactly the right question, and the AI then can still figure out what you mean. So plus minus, that's like what a vector database is really great in the AI terms. So you can scan your documents, you can then have those, you can then like use a vector database on top of that, and then you can have your custom, like you can then use a LLM like ChatGPT or whatever, and then it will use those base models that you provide it. And so you then have suddenly an expert in your field that can not only like paraphrase you something like a chat response, as you might know from ChatGPT, but it will then also will be able to point out the references where it got its information in the documentation, which then will allow you to go right out to that spot in the document. And I think that's something really cool, because I mean, if you are in an expert field where you kind of are looking for something, but you don't know in which of all the documents it is, and you can then just ask someone a question. I mean, that's what I usually do, like too lazy to look around in the internal interwebs to find something. If the search doesn't bring it up, you will just walk over to someone and say like, look, I'm looking for something like this. And he goes like, you're looking for that and that. And I mean, automating those processes in certain fields, that can be a real game changer, especially like when you want to onboard new people and they have to rely on the actual facts and not what a LLM thinks is the right answer. I think that's a really cool scenario, which I see quite a few fields that could really use those cases. And it's a fun thing to have as an arsenal. And that's one thing you can actually do now on Azure, or you could already do, and it's been under heavy development. So if you like look at the questions or like the answers given, it's like, well, can I do this? And then you can find like an answer from October, November 2023, and it goes like, yeah, well, we're working on it. And then you can see like April 2024, well, yeah, now you can do it. So yeah, it's a cool space to mingle in if you are looking for working a bit on new, exciting, leading edge stuff. So yeah, but that's my key takeaway from the build is there is a lot of cool new things coming along. There are also some .NET MAUI shows, which you should definitely check out, because we always love the MAUIs.
I still need to watch those back for the most part, if they are still on demand, that is. But what you're basically describing is SharePoint Copilot, something like that.
I don't know. Did you just name that thing in our show? How dare you?
Sorry, Office 365 Copilot.
I guess you could call it that if you have a Office 365. But usually, I think you want to like also embed it in existing applications. It might be that that's in SharePoint. Usually, you still need to do some, let's just say, tweaking of stuff. So I think that's like one of the things that companies like Microsoft, of course, aspire to making a slow migration there. No, but I think so. If the more general services you can provide, the better. And then the question always becomes like, how much does that cost? Because it's just, it's not just like a new feature that you're putting on. It's not like it's the same foundation. You usually then use a entirely different service, and it's a lot more compute intensive than just having like your SQL query being extended by a bit. It's a bit more work involved, but yeah, I mean, who knows, maybe one day it will be SharePoint Copilot. Yeah, CSP Copilot SharePoint. I'm not in the marketing department there, but
nah, maybe better.
I'm not good with boring names. Oh, did I just say that on the show? Oh god, no. But yeah, marketing is, I think naming is hard. We all know that as programmers, so I'm not throwing anybody under the bus for coming up with strange names.
True. So you were alluding to it already, .NET Aspire. Slightly bridged us towards it. And you also said it in the intro, so let's talk about it a bit.
Yeah, I gave it away in the intro, that's true. Yeah.
So what it basically is, and I've only seen like a few presentations on it. I haven't used it yet, which is a shame because I want to, but I just don't see a current need to, which I guess I could figure it out in my own time, but we all know we don't have own time. That is
yeah, those weekends.
Yeah, which weekends?
Yeah, the non-existent ones.
It feels like it's Friday and then the next day it's Monday.
Yeah, the worst.
But yeah, so what it basically is it's a framework that was designed to simplify creating cloud-ready apps, basically. So it's a bunch of NuGet packages for all kinds of services like Redis cache or SQL Server databases, all sorts of things that you can run in the cloud. And it basically handles orchestration between all those things. So you get tools to simply tie all these things together. So say you have a web app that needs a Redis cache. It's like one or two lines of code to hook those two together, and they know of each other, they can communicate with each other, and basically that's all you need to do. So it's not like you're shipping query strings and making all sorts of connections and stuff like that. They just know that they're there and they can communicate with one another. And that's like the orchestration part is the part that I liked the most from what I've seen so far. It does a lot of other things. I think I'm selling it short a bit by describing it as I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we can roll into those over the next couple of minutes. But basically, yeah, I mean, I think they call it an opinionated way to have how to develop cloud-ready applications. And we all know what cloud-ready means. Cloud-ready usually means it will be a lot easier to deploy than in the cloud because it already has got this mindset of how you set up certain things. So you don't rely on local file systems, stuff like that, but you've got like all these different services. And so you communicate over these services with endpoints, or you have to know like the configuration of those endpoints, how that's set up. One thing I really like about .NET Aspire, or let's maybe take a step back, who's a .NET Aspire for? In the early days when we wrote web applications, we might have had like one ASP.NET MVC application that we wrote. And in that ASP.NET MVC applications, we might have had some libraries to split up the code a bit, but basically you had one starting application, and when you started that thing up, you had your application, it was running, you could navigate to all the sites, you had all your services, everything was there. You still needed a database usually for a web application, but you had LocalDB for, I don't know, ever and ever on Windows, at least. On Mac, that's a bit of a different story, but you basically set with a little developer database, and then you're running, and it's all there. And today we have a bit of a different picture. So microservices entered the room. A lot of companies have adopted the microservice style, or one had the need to like plug out certain parts of that great monolith because one had scalability issues with some parts, so one had to do something different there, or it was not running on the same server instances out of various reasons that are just there. And as soon as you got like two or more ASP.NET applications or .NET Core or whatever services, or it might even be an entire different language, You then have like the problem like, okay, so you press F5 in Visual Studio, then you have maybe multiple Visual Studio instances open. You write yourself a little script that then starts up your other applications, and that was just, it becomes like more complicated to just like develop stuff because you need like certain services that are there so you can do stuff, and that can be quite a pain. You have things like Docker Compose, for example, where you can also set up these things, but it's not like a first party citizen in a .NET landscape. You configure those with a YAML file. Probably for some listeners, this is absolutely not rocket science, but if you're starting out, it's just like another thing I have to learn. And if you want to onboard someone, it just means like, okay, so first you now learn how to use this and how you use the configuration, and then we can talk about doing these other things. And with .NET Aspire, what you actually get is you get like a starting point. So when you hit F5 in your Visual Studio, the stuff just starts up. And you hinted a bit at that with Redis and all that. I mean, so if you got other services that you're using, like a cache, a database, or I don't know, a AI large language model service that you're hosting on your own, you would that might be written in a completely different stack. But .NET Aspire will allow you to get those things. They call them components. So you can plug in different components. You can write your own components. So if your company has got your own services, you could plug them in as components. And .NET Aspire will take care of it for you. So the stuff will start up. And you don't have to like write these wonky debug statements like, hey, if in debug, we don't have a Redis cache, we just have some mock or stub implementation of that going on. And then whenever you deploy it then to the real server, the stuff suddenly starts to explode because you didn't think that Redis might like treat it differently, or especially I haven't worked that much with Redis. I don't know if that's the case there, but I mean databases, especially like if you use locally a different database than you use in production, you always have these fringe issues that you only have in production because there you got like the real database running, and locally you're running on some local DB thing that is just not quite as constrained or hasn't got the same feature set as you would have on the real thing. And so suddenly things go haywire. And yeah, but you might have been there. And so .NET Aspire allows you to have like a real production environment locally without having to deal with stuff like Docker Compose and going on. The really cool thing I think about this aspect though is you got like all these thing configured with .NET Aspire, and then you can push it up to the cloud. So all these service configurations, you got like names for your services, and locally they will have different addresses. Like, so if you got your local development machine, you press F5, everything will be running like a local host, da da da. If you push it up to the cloud, that's a different story. You'll have different IPs and all those configuration things, and that's something that .NET Aspire will handle for you. So I think if you're having a application, or if you're running something that uses multiple services, components, or you got multiple .NET web APIs, whatever going on, .NET Aspire is surely something you want to look at. Even if you just have got like one .NET backend and you got a front end written with Angular, Vue, or React, or Svelte, or whatever JS flavor you want to have, you could also then do that in .NET Aspire, and it will start up your front end and your back end simultaneously. So those are always nice things, because usually it's always when you got something, for me, that's always like the onboarding process. If I only have to press F5, I can just tell the person, well, check this out, press F5, you're good. Maybe like still, you have to install these and these things, press F5, and then you're good. Whenever there's like a script that might break and it got like 20 decision points because you use the script in multiple environments, that's when suddenly you see a senior dev sitting next to a person for 2 to 3 days, and the person's head is just like exploding because he has to now learn the entire complexity of the app just to start developing. Yeah, but I think that's something really sweet I really like about .NET Aspire.
Yeah, and to me also, I don't know if you've seen it, but the dashboard that it comes with. It comes with this really useful dashboard where it just shows you all the resources that are in your app environment that are all tied together. You can see all the logs, all the traces. You get all these fancy graphs out of the box of how it's performing.
I think that's how you can sell it to your manager, right? You can say, if we do a .NET Aspire, well, we get a fancy new dashboard. I'm not sure. I think right now it might be only for development purposes you see the dashboard, but yeah. I think there they were looking at it to get it also like for production environments. I think that's like the opinionated thing is, or one thing that I learned when I was like digging into .NET Aspire is most of the features that you get with .NET Aspire are already part of the ASP.NET Core stack. So what the dashboard does, it hooks into stuff like OpenTelemetry, which is, yeah, if you haven't heard of it so far, check it out. There are like you'll find tons of content on the interwebs about it. But you get like these, how is my server doing? How are requests doing? Like telemetry, as it says, and it's an open standard. So many web frameworks and so have adopted it. And that's actually really built into ASP.NET Core. What Aspire now does, it takes an opinionated way on first like enabling it because you need it to get the information, and then also how you can present that information. Now, if you're already using OpenTelemetry in your app and you already have a dashboard, you might not get the most out of that feature. You might have some other parts that .NET Aspire will take over for you. But if you haven't got that yet, it's a really nice way. And you mentioned it before, like traces. So if you got multiple systems that are working together, you have like the request will originate maybe from the front end, maybe from some back end service or whatever. And then you can see like how does it go through the service. And if you don't have a trace number that will identify the request when it passes through all the services, it can be quite a hassle to analyze the log statements because you go then like, okay, so timestamp over here, what happened timestamp in this log over there? And it's just like you don't have like one master view where you can just like, or maybe even filter stuff. Yeah, I think it's quite cool. I haven't used yet the dashboard feature for so much, to be honest. I'm more played around with the configuration parts on the front end. But I think this can be quite powerful, especially because you got like this, it's automatically turned on. So you get like a lot of these features by just using .NET Aspire, which before you would have to dig into documentation. Hey, how do I enable this? What do I have to do with my request? Blah, 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 blah. And here you get it like already baked in, which is quite cool.
Yeah, and I think it's also pretty cool that say you have an existing app that doesn't use Aspire yet. You can pretty easily right click on the project and then add components that you need, or give it the hosting packages to make it into an Aspire hosted app, so to speak. So it's really like a few clicks and a few lines of code, and you can convert your existing app into one that gets all these fancy orchestration and dashboarding features. That's pretty cool to see that you can pimp your own little app like that.
Yeah, I think it's like a gateway drug, this Aspire, because you get like out of the get-go, you will get like a ton of useful information. And then as you move along and as you dig into it, you can enhance these things even further. And I guess the more people will use .NET Aspire, the more traction you will also get by the teams from Microsoft, and they will add some probably sexy further features that you could do. And I think one of the questions I sometimes get when I talk with other people about .NET Aspire, so it's cloud ready, it's from Microsoft, is it only for Azure? And no, it's not. So Aspire is it's open source. You can find it on GitHub, and it is extensible. So I guess the documentation from Microsoft will not show you how you deploy an Aspire application into the Amazon cloud. I mean, I would understand why they wouldn't do that, but you can do that. So you can extend .NET Aspire if you are running your own cloud or you're running your own infrastructure to hook into these parts and write your own parts so you can deploy it. And it's also cloud ready doesn't mean it can only run in the cloud. I think that's also like important. So if you got an application that you're running on your own servers or it's running on premise, you can totally use .NET Aspire to do that. The tools are not in Aspire itself, like they won't be provided probably by Microsoft, or not right now at this moment, but you can from the Aspire configuration that you do, you can then generate a Docker Compose file. And with Docker Compose, that means you can run it on your own servers, you can run it in your own containers, which is a really nice thing, I think. And that's also like, that's not only for the deployment scenarios, but also for other parts like the components. If you look at the component list right now, I mean, for me, it looks pretty pretty nice. Like the services that I use on a daily basis are already there. So I got my database, which is already there. I got a SCQ, that's for logging, which is already there as a component, which I can hook in. I got my RabbitMQ as a messaging server, that's already in there. My NoSQL databases, I don't actually use any of those, but they're there. You got Apache Kafka. So I think this list will grow over time, but like the most common open source frameworks that I use heavily in the industry that I heard many people talking about, like, hey, I'm using Redis, I'm using RabbitMQ, some kind of SQL server, some kind of DocumentDB. I think a lot of the more common ones, they're already up there. And of course, you also get components for the Azure services, like Azure OpenAI. So if you want to...
Let's not forget AI.
Yeah, if you want to hook into your AI services, you can do that with a little component. I mean, which is nice because it will then just run and work. But Stephen, if someone wants to get started with .NET Inspire, where would you send them to?
Microsoft Docs, as per usual. And I think I'm pretty sure you'll be able to find a recording of some sessions. I saw one by James Montemagno a while ago. I'm pretty sure he gave that talk a few times on his tour across Europe. Some recording should exist of it, I would imagine. We'll put that in the show notes when we do find one.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I remember James, he was in Europe recently and he gave a session on .NET Inspire, which I heard some positive, so early in the mornings, which I heard some raving reviews about, I want to say. And there's now, so there is on, if you go like to the main site of .NET Inspire, you will find a training section on there, which will like get you up and running and like an introduction and how you can create these applications. The documentation looks, is quite sound, I would say, like for getting started. And I would not be surprised if you, over the next few months and during conferences and stuff, will hear more and more about .NET Inspire, especially since it's now been marked as GA, so generally available, which if that term is still the same, would mean that Microsoft now starts to support it more openly. So if you start to build like some production apps now on it, it should not have any breaking changes anymore once it then goes fully live. Or it's generally available already fully live. I always get confused. There are too many. I mean, I know that beta or preview is not fully live, but generally available, it's always like one of these fringe terms for me. Like it's not yet really ready, but we're kind of ready. And we would all like that you use it now. Please, please give us feedback.
No? To me, it should be when you call it that. Yeah. But yeah, it's a bit of a gray area.
Bit of a gray area. Yeah, let's leave it there. One interesting thing. So the first time I heard about .NET Inspire was, I thought it was like that thing. Do you remember Dapr?
Dapr.
D-A-P-R, which is also like a framework how you can compose different services.
Yeah.
I was like, that's interesting. Didn't Dapr already solve this? And I think, so .NET Inspire is like, it's more for me. It's more like for the developer. So Dapr was, I think, more on the infrastructure side, like composing all these things together. But apparently, I've heard that it even integrates with that. So if you are familiar to Dapr or you're already using Dapr for this, you should definitely check out the website. I think there's somewhere on the frameworks, frameworks Dapr, you'll find how you could integrate it even with Dapr, which I've never played with, to be honest, Dapr. I heard it's the thing to do. And if you're not using Dapr and you're using cloud, you're doing it wrong. So I might have done it wrong, or that might have been a very extreme opinion of someone. And there's also examples how you can use Orléans. Orléans was I think it was originally developed for Halo, for the online gaming. So it was always like making sure that you had enough services running, stuff like that. Crazy stuff. Before like Kubernetes became the standard, there were many other ways how you could do this. So there's even... I think it even integrates with that, or at least they make some examples how you could use Orléans with it so it would work. I've got no idea about Orléans. I'll just leave it at that and move on.
No, but what you're saying is kind of like there are so many things that you can use for so many problems to solve, and it's nice that something like Aspire just kind of takes care of being the man in the middle between all of these things. It also obviously adds a single point of failure in that sense. So it's like, it's a bit of a trade-off you're doing, I guess, to have something orchestrate all of that and be in there. But yeah, I mean, it from what I've seen so far, it's pretty solid.
I think you touched a good point there. I mean, sure, some people will not like the idea of having something like .NET Aspire taking over all these things. But on the other hand, I have to say, if you're a .NET developer and you develop web applications and you want to deploy them to the cloud, right now, you kind of have to figure out how to do this stuff, this composition stuff, and how to do all the telemetry stuff. And there were like manuals or PDF documents like on the interwebs, like these are best practices. And then like 5 years after you've done your stuff, you then read the best practice and you suddenly figure out like, I was doing this all wrong all along. Well, why didn't no one tell me when I was making file new project that this would be the way I can do it? And with .NET Aspire, I think you got like from a developer perspective, I have now a one-stop thing that will help me along the way. And especially .NET Aspire is developed by the ASP.NET Core team. So they know what ASP.NET Core can do. And it's like from the same minds. So like the architecture usually of a framework, they have some intentions how you should use it. And with .NET Aspire, we now know it is following along the same intentions. So it will hook in at the right points where ASP.NET Core would usually have those things hook into. And that is, I think, really nice. It also is like a template if you're not using .NET Aspire, or if you like already using something different, or you already have done some composition with Docker Compose or whatever. I think .NET Aspire still is like a great way to look at how the ASP.NET Core team thinks you should use OpenTelemetry, or thinks how you could use certain scenarios, so that you can then like incorporate these best practices into your own app, or use a .NET Aspire for those parts. I think still is to be seen how this all will work out. I mean, one critique one might bring out is that .NET Aspire is a bit late to the party. I mean, it's not like we are composing these things since yesterday. I mean, it's been a couple of years that we have the cloud around and all these services. But yeah, I don't see like the needs going away for having these composition things not being done. I mean, sure, if you now have a successful application up in the cloud, you probably will already have dealt with many of these things. But if you're only just starting out, or if you're doing a new project and you just want to, I mean, even save some time, because you don't have to figure out these things. You got like a ready built template for ASP.NET Core. Yeah, I mean, I would definitely give it a look. On the other side, it's still a bit early days, so I would guess there's still some hiccups or some rough edges here and there when you use .NET Aspire. But yeah, I think it's like the web space is so vast. You got so many different use cases. You got so many different ways how you can set these things up. I guess that's why you go out with GA and tell the people, please use us now. Don't miss out the OpenAI component integration to sprinkle some AI goodness over your application. Joke aside, I think I really like this approach, and I've been dabbling with it now for a couple of weeks, and it's a cool thing, especially because it's a forge from a similar mind thinking point than I am, which is the developer way, and I don't have to like first like get a degree in system administration, setup, stuff like that, which I usually don't have to do. But in the recent years, I mean, that's why DevOps is here. Dev and Ops, they're growing together. And I think .NET Aspire is a great way to allow us developers to take more part in this conversation.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's a developer first kind of approach. You're writing a few lines of code to tie all of this together. So you're in charge. I don't know how the system ops guys are going to like it, but yeah, I mean, it'll be fine.
I don't know. I think like the system op guys and the developer guys, I mean, I think they just, that's the thing I like about the DevOps culture. Like if you can live it, DevOps is not a tool you can buy. DevOps is a culture. And it means like that we developers have to enable our ops team, and our ops team has to enable us developers to bring these more automated fashions to the table. And with things like, with things like .NET Aspire, and also like Docker or Kubernetes, we now have these possibilities to have these, to enhance these things. And so I'm looking, I think it's a cool feature. And also knowing that you can generate like a Docker Compose file. Like I remember when GiveCore first came out and you have all the migrations in code, and then you sometimes have people that go like, oh, no. You will not roll some automatic migrations. You will hand me over your SQL scripts, and then we will check them, and then we will apply them. You can do that with GiveCore, right? I think that's like one of the reasons why you can generate scripts, and you can do the same here. So you can, you can have a different format if you need to. I think you could also convert it into different formats if you wanted to. I mean, it won't be already in there in the framework, but you could do it, and you could integrate it then into your other flows until it fully takes over. But yeah, and on that note, I think we're at an end, Stephen. I think we still have to mention that we are going on summer vacation, and by we, I mean I. So
I was about to say
there might be a bit of a longer pause until our next episode, but the studio time is already being booked for next time, so we will be back.
One day.
Yeah, see you on the socials. We have you being your hosts, Mark Halibone.
And Stephen Davison.
Take care.